Okay, so Hare Krishna. Today is the start of a series of classes as we build up towards the most auspicious occasion of Ram Navami, which we will be celebrating in the presence of Lord Ram on Sunday, hopefully. So the idea of this series of classes with different speakers is to build our mood, build our thought processes, build our thinking, so that we are ready to welcome Lord Ram properly. So we'll read from a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam today, and then we'll discuss something about the qualities of Lord Ram. So this is verse 23, chapter 9, and the chapter is entitled, Canto 9, chapter 11, and the chapter is entitled, Lord Ramachandra Rules the World. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. O King Parikshit, anyone who orally receives the narrations concerning the characteristics of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes will ultimately be freed from the disease of envy and thus be liberated from the bondage of fruitive activities. Purport. Here in this material world, everyone is envious of someone else. Even in religious life, it is sometimes found that if one devotee has advanced in spiritual activities, other devotees are envious of him. Such envious devotees are not completely freed from the bondage of birth and death. As long as one is not completely free from the cause of birth and death, one cannot enter the Sanatana Dham or the eternal pastimes of the Lord. Shri Shri Radha Gokulanand ki. As long as one is not completely free from the cause of birth and death, one cannot enter the Sanatana Dham or the eternal pastimes of the Lord. One becomes envious because of being influenced by the designations of the body, but the liberated devotee has nothing to do with the body, and therefore he is completely on the transcendental platform. A devotee is never envious of anyone, even his enemy. Because the devotee knows that the Lord is his supreme protector, he thinks, what harm can the so-called enemy do? Thus a devotee is confident about his protection. The Lord says, Yayatha mam prapadyante tam stateva bhajamyaham. According to the proportion of one's surrender unto me, I respond accordingly. A devotee must therefore be completely free from envy, especially of other devotees. To envy other devotees is a great offense, a Vaishnav aparad. A devotee who constantly engages in hearing and chanting, Shravana Kirtana, is certainly freed from the disease of envy, and thus he becomes eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I chose this verse because I felt it would be a good way for us to develop our mood as we lead up to Sunday. Over the next few days, different devotees will discuss different pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, and there'll be a focus on the Lord's qualities. The Lord is... Well, he's Krishna himself, Lord Ramachandra is Krishna himself. And Krishna is full of qualities. And so Lord Ram is also full of multiple qualities. And especially there will be a focus on the qualities that we can attempt to emulate. The Lord is obviously unlimitedly blissful and unlimitedly powerful. And there is no chance for an ordinary jiva to try to imitate everything that the Lord does. But there are certain qualities which Lord Ram came to exemplify that can be very useful for us if we attempt to apply them, if we attempt to imbibe them. So hopefully you'll get a series of different points and philosophical creations and pastimes all centered around Lord Ram over the next few days. And we can understand the potency of this type of narration or hearing this narration. that it says that anyone who orally receives these narrations concerning Lord Ramachandra will be freed from the disease of envy. And this disease of envy is a very deep-seated disease. And in Lord Ramachandra's behavior, there was a complete absence of it. And the word envy is used in different ways. Here the term that's used is anrishamsya, which is slightly different to the normal words that we use, like matsara. That word you may be familiar with. That is the typical word for envy. This has more of a context of non-violence. It's similar to ahimsa, amrishya, anrishamsya. It has a hint of non-violence, ahimsa, within it. And so this is also useful to understand Prabhupada's use of the word envy. While envy in our common day-to-day usage typically invokes a sense of jealousy, there's a sense of jealousy that this person is better than me and I resent that. And there's a sort of a jealousy comparing ourselves to someone. Often Srila Prabhupada doesn't use the word envy with that connotation of jealousy. It's used more in this sense of ill will towards others. If you're envious towards someone, the idea is that you are aggressive or confrontational, or you have something against the other person. It may not necessarily be because you consider them to be better developed in some way. It can just be a feeling of enmity. That might be a way to describe it sometimes. And so but nevertheless, these concepts are all connected. Because typically one develops ill will or ill feelings towards others when they wish they had something that the other one did. Now in Lord Ram's behavior, we see that is absent. And actually it's an important point to take on board, because one becomes envious when one refuses to acknowledge the supremacy of the Supreme Lord. So in the Bhagavad Gita, this is explained very clearly. Bhoktaram yagyatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantim richati. That there are three points, very important points, that the population in the world largely ignores. That first of all, the Lord is sarvaloka maheshwaram. He's the supreme proprietor. He's the Lord of everything. He's also the enjoyer of everything. Now, in saintly societies, sacrifice would be the main thing that people concern themselves with. And therefore, he's described as Bhoktaram Yagyatapasam, that he's the enjoyer of all yagyas, all austerities, all activities that people do. But in a wider sense, he's actually the enjoyer of everything that goes on. And also, it's described that he is the friend of all living entities. He's Surit, he's within the heart, very, very close to the person. Closer than any other friend you have. Because, I mean, who can be right in your heart, sharing your thoughts, giving you advice, guidance, most of which we ignore. But he's there doing that, nevertheless, day in, day out. So he has these positions. He's the supreme proprietor, he's the enjoyer, he's the supreme friend. Now, sadly, in this world, we are trained almost systematically since birth to put ourselves in that position. We are trained to be successful in life so that we become the proprietor of something. It could be a business, could be a house, could be a family, could be a country, depending on your ambitions. There's no limit to someone's ambitions. Could be wealth. So we are taught, we are systematically educated to become the proprietor and then to collect as much as possible of whatever it is we're after, and then to enjoy it. So we fail on the second point as well, because the Lord is the supreme enjoyer. And ultimately, everything that there is, that exists, was supplied by him. Now, people often say, well, this table wasn't created by the Lord. It was created in a factory, you know, with processes and great engineering expertise and whole mining operations and things like that. Well, all the raw ingredients were supplied by the Lord. No one can say they manufactured trees. they were all supplied by the Lord. Then the intelligence to exploit those resources was also given by the Lord. Then the ability to exploit those resources was given by the Lord. So if something is done by a person, but the ingredients, the ability, perhaps even the direction to do so was supplied by the Lord, to what extent is it the person's own endeavor? Now, people in the world in general don't like to acknowledge this fact because it's disturbing. If you put yourself outside of this concept of being a proprietor, enjoyer, well, there isn't really anything that you can hold on to. It doesn't give any food for the ego. And the ego, the false identity that I am the enjoyer, is the reason we're here. So therefore it is said in this verse that if one gives up this disease of envy, one can be liberated from the bondage of fruitive activities. So there is a strong link between our adoption of becoming our decision to be a proprietor and an enjoyer and remaining in the bondage of fruitive activities. Now this root disease of envy is interesting, and it manifests, as Prabhupada seems to indicate here, in devotees' lives as well. It says if it is sometimes found that if one devotee has advanced in spiritual activities, other devotees are envious of him. Now there is one big difference between that envy and the envy of the materialists. Because the devotees attend classes, they read the Bhagavatam. So very soon they understand the dangers of envy. However, materialists begin on a path of envy, propagate the path of envy, and culture it and reinforce it at every stage. Therefore, they never have a chance to correct themselves. Devotees, on the other hand, whatever mistakes they make, whatever insufficiencies they may have, whatever stumblings they enact on their path, they can all be rectified by the mercy of the Lord. So devotees are very, very fortunate. When we're trying to chant the holy names of the Lord, we're actually chanting someone else's name. Right? Krishna, we're chanting Krishna's name. Krishna's name, Lord Ramachandra's name, Balaram's name. But in our mind, if we haven't accepted Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam, we're actually chanting our name. In our mind, through our activities, our consciousness, our state of thinking, subconsciously, the world is centered around me. The world is centered around my progress. Even my progress in spiritual life. Even that is the level to which it may be centered around us, even in an environment where the Lord is the center. My spiritual progress, my efforts, my chanting of the holy name. Well, there's a little bit of a problem here. Because if we are thinking of ourselves subtly, even subconsciously, how can we meaningfully place someone else into our consciousness? There isn't much room for it. So we may be chanting Krishna's names, but there may be a sense of, okay, I would like to obtain something from this chanting process. It could be I want to be purified. It could be that I would like opulence, wealth, results. I would like to have a clean, peaceful life. I would like a sattvic existence. I would like good health. These concepts may be actually churning in our mind a lot more than the presence of Krishna. And so for a devotee, they go through this transition phase where we all start off completely interested in the world of Maya, in being a proprietor, being the enjoyer. But then we slowly transition to a stage where Krishna starts to become the most important concept, the most important object, the most important person in our life. And of course, during that phase, it will be a little grey on both sides. We won't fully be we won't fully have Krishna in our consciousness, and we won't fully have left the material world. So we have this sort of grey fuzziness that accompanies our spiritual practice for many, many years. And therefore the whole process is given, how one starts from adho shraddha, tatha sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, nartha nivritti, nishta, these stages where one progresses from association, faith, practice, destroying our anarthas, and then reaching more of a steady stage. This takes some time. So all we have to do is, while we're in this grey phase, we just have to keep at it. We just have to stick with it. And eventually, as Prabhupada promises, the grey clouds will lift. We will be situated in that state where Krishna is fully present in our consciousness. Our thoughts, our actions, our agendas, even subtly, even subconsciously, are all centered around the pleasure of the Lord. That is the way by which we ultimately give up this disease of envy. By placing Krishna in the center, and by understanding that He is the seed-giving Father of all living entities, Aham Bija Pradapita. He's the seed-giving Father, which means every person is dear to Him. Which means when we are competing with each other to acquire something, to enjoy something, to be the proprietor of something, it is taking away from Krishna's position. Even sometimes as a friend, we might try to usurp Krishna's position. If we're a proprietor, it's clear. It's Krishna's property, supplied by Him, managed by Him. But maybe the friend part isn't so clear. But that itself has a subtle aspect of trying to be the Lord. Because Krishna is the best friend of every living entity. And sometimes people think that through their actions, through their endeavors, perhaps through their charitable acts, they are now going to do something for someone which Krishna didn't think about. And subtly there can be a sense of superiority there. The motive isn't bad. The motive of wanting to help others isn't bad at all. Kindness, tolerance, compassion, mercy, these are foundational pillars of spiritual life. But it has to be done with the right mentality. Sometimes people become so enamored with the efforts they themselves are making to be a friend to someone, to give them good advice, to look after them, to save them from distress, that it actually becomes a type of complex where the person considers themselves to be the doer. And that is the danger. That is the danger. Because again, subtly it's crept in now. That my abilities, my desires, my noble virtues are in play here when I'm now going to be friendly towards others. As Prabhupada said, most of the activities in this world are sense gratification, largely personal sense gratification, and then for those who are more refined, extended sense gratification. So no longer am I concerned with just my own entertainment or my own satisfaction. But now I will extend it. I will extend it to those near me. I will extend it to the protection, satisfaction, care of my family. Then I will extend it to my nation. Perhaps even my faith, the organization. It will be sense gratification, personal or extended. And that is also something to move away from. Lord Ram demonstrated through his behavior many aspects, and very strongly he demonstrated how he cared for others without a personal sense of ownership or control. Now, Lord Ram is the supreme controller, so it sounds a little ironic that he did this. But he came specifically in this world and acted as the topmost Purusha, the ideal person in this world. Most merciful, most pleasing, most calm, most munificent, most beneficial, kind. But he demonstrated how this is possible. He demonstrated that this is possible when we don't consider ourselves or our own agenda. And Lord Ramachandra did this on multiple occasions. Now just cast your mind to the point just before Lord Ram is due to be coronated. The day of his coronation, the evening before his coronation. Kaikeyi has just dropped the bombshell on Dasharath. Everyone's prepared, everyone is happy, they're waiting for the coronation to take place the following day. But now she has suddenly said, "Do you remember these two boons you owe me?" And Dashrath is saying, "Yes, what? Whatever it is, I will fulfill it immediately." And she said, "I want my son Bharat to become king. And I want you further to send Lord Ram to the forest in exile." Now you can imagine the shock of everyone around. It is something completely inconceivable. The entire kingdom was ready, the brothers were happy, all the mothers were happy, Dashrath was happy. All the citizens were just looking forward to this glorious day when Lord Ram is finally going to sit on the throne and finally be our king, which is what they wanted. But they've just heard this. So you can imagine what happens. Dashrath falls unconscious. And when they realize, when he finally wakes up and realizes this is not just a nightmare, it's reality, you can imagine the devastation that everyone experiences. Then Lord Ram arrives prior to his coronation. And how do you explain that to Lord Ram? He's just arrived. Well, Dashrath is there, Kaikeyi is there, and Dashrath is trying to speak and he just cannot. He cannot say anything. He just does not know how to express these feelings, express the most terrible words that he has been ordered to speak. So then Kaikeyi steps in and says, "What your father is afraid to tell you is that he has made his decision, that your brother Bharat will be king and you will be sent to the forest." Now for a normal person to hear this, there would be feelings of shock, definitely. But then a sense of rebellion, injustice. How could this happen? Father, is this correct? He checks with his father and his father, through his silence, indicates, yes, this is what's due to happen. Lord Ramachandra is completely equipoised and completely detached. He accepts that fulfilling the promise of his father is a higher task than fulfilling any of his own desires. Anything he would get through being a king, proprietorship, clearly, being a friend to all the citizens, that's been denied to him, being the enjoyer of so many kingly delights. He is not remotely interested in any of that. He's calm, he's equipoised, he's peaceful. Kaikeyi has prepared a special dress for Ram. This is how kind she was. Lord Ram is due to go to the forest, and that clearly means you have to give up your princely attire. No more fine regalia, robes, crowns, jewels. And she says, "Oh, I've prepared some tree bark dresses for you." And they're not just for Lord Ram, because Lakshman also says, "I'm definitely going with you." There was no question of them being separate. So she has all these things prepared. But then Sita comes. And Sita says, "I'm also going with you." Now imagine how painful that was for Lord Ram to hear. This is Mother Sita, who is a princess. She's used to palatial comforts, used to being treated as a princess. And she's now being sent to the forest. Well, Kaikeyi wasn't flustered about this at all. She said, "I've also prepared a dress for you." And she put on this dress of tree bark on Mother Sita. The whole scene is so horrific, actually. If you think about it, it's a horrific scene. Everyone is standing there, completely incapable of doing anything, because obviously the etiquette is that Dashrath has made a decision. And he's in no mood or no state of mind to say anything. He's lost. But this eventuality is taking place. Lord Ram is completely equipoised. He's obviously heartbroken at seeing what's going to happen to Lakshman and to Mother Sita. But what is also interesting is that Lord Ram embodies all these transcendental qualities, and so do his close companions, so do his servants. Lakshman is fully prepared to accept all the austerity that Lord Ram is about to experience in the forest, and more. Because we hear that during that entire exile, Lord Ram did not eat or drink. Because he was standing guard. He didn't sleep either. He was keeping guard. He was practicing austerity. His mission was to protect the Lord. Mother Sita underwent so many austerities which were not appropriate because Lord Ram did so. And then she describes that these times living with Lord Ram in Chitrakoot, the most beautiful, not because of the luxury, not because of the opulence, but because Lord Ram was there. And they were there able to render him service. So Lord Ram's special mood of complete detachment, complete subservience to principles and duty is one of his strongest qualities. The Ramayana is a very exciting story. And you know, it is a grand epic. And many people are attracted to the Ramayana. Some of you have probably been hearing it since a young age. The story of the Ramayana, the conquest of Lanka, the journey through the forest, the fighting with Jatayu, the parting of the ocean, and the wonderful Diwali episodes of welcoming the transcendental aeroplane back to Ayodhya. These are all the wonderful occasions, the pastimes, the adventures with the monkeys, with Sugriva, with Vali. And these are all enthralling. Then building the bridge to Lanka. Full of pastimes. It's the original epic. It's the original epic from a bygone age with the Supreme Lord present. And there's something there for absolutely everyone. A sense of adventure, a sense of enjoyment, a hope of that righteousness will prevail. It is the age-old victory of good over evil. It is something people like very much. People like the opulence. People like Ram Rajya, as took place in Ayodhya once Lord Ram was finally back and coronated. They want Ram Rajya. They want the kingdom of Ram, where everyone is blissful, everything is happy. There is no shortage of any funds. No one has to die unless they want to. There is no disease, no old age, nothing. Everyone likes those ideas. They would like to be in that sort of environment. So different people take different jewels from the Ramayana. The story, the lessons, the intrigue, the moral aspects, the loyalty of Jatayu. But there is one little treasure which as devotees, specifically we get from the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam often in this connection with this story and many other episodes gives a slightly different angle to different pastimes that are found in other Puranas. In other Puranas or other stories and works. Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki. Sri Ramachandra Bhagavan Ki. And specifically, through the words in the Bhagavatam, we are given an insight into the mind of Lord Ram. We're given a little insight, even through Valmiki's Ramayana, we're given an insight into the character of Lord Ram, into his thinking, his meditation. And through that process, his qualities come out. We can actually benefit the most from Lord Ram's Leela when we focus on Lord Ram. As with the Mahabharata, there is a lot of intrigue. There is a lot of adventure. There is a lot of interest, excitement, many sub-adventures, many sub-stories. But what is perhaps the trickiest part is to see how Lord Ram behaved. And to see Lord Ram's shining example as the biggest gift within the Ramayana. The way he conducted himself, the way he behaved at every instant is exemplary. There are numerous occasions. This pastime I mentioned with Lord Ram being informed about going to the forest. You can just imagine how many people Lord Ram could have had a right to be envious of in that assembly. He could have felt he had a right to be envious of Kaikeyi for doing this to him, for her son Bharat for being part of the whole scene, for Dashrath for agreeing to do this, for Mantara for inspiring Kaikeyi to behave like this. There is no end of persons Lord Ram could have blamed. But he didn't. He behaved with complete grace, complete steadiness. Here at the manor, we're very fortunate that Sita Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman are here. And especially Lord Ram always has a pleasing smile on his face. And so does Lakshman. And this is a demonstration of their consciousness. Lord Ram's consciousness is centered around true, even while he's playing the part of a human, his consciousness is truly divine. And his characteristics and behavior are divine. We might think it's odd if we claim Lord Ram wasn't envious. After all, wasn't he envious towards Ravana? Well, no, if we think about it carefully, even right up to the end, he said to Ravana, even right at the end, just prior to the final battle taking place, he said to Ravana, "Ravana, you still have a chance. You give back Mother Sita, and all will be forgiven." Right up to that final moment, Lord Ram was willing to forgive Ravana, who had caused so much distress to him, his family, the entire kingdom, Mother Sita, everyone. Lord Ram didn't even have envy for Ravana. Ravana has 10 heads, and we burn them on Dashera celebrations. And every year, I don't know if you remember, but every year, for several years, at least one or two of the heads would not get burnt. You would have 10 heads, and then the fire would be started. And most of them would burn eventually, with a lot of diesel or petrol or something, because it would typically always rain also here on Dashera. But there would always be one or two heads left. And these are the most... And each of those heads represents anarthas. So Shruti Ramaprabhu used to say that these two heads are the ones that are most difficult to get rid of. The ones that represent envy. They are the deep-seated attachments and hankerings that are centered in our heart. These are the ones that don't disappear. But in Lord Ram's behavior, you see a complete absence. Now, why is it so difficult for people to actually put this into practice? You know, we come before Lord Ram, we pray to be freed from the disease of envy, to be free from hankering, hatred, anger, illusion. But these things don't go so quickly. Well, the problem is that even though we like these items as sentiments, we don't necessarily like the consequence if we imbibed those things. When we talk about topics like envy, and we talk about not trying to be the proprietor, not being the enjoyer, not to consider oneself the real friend even of anyone, people will hear this and they don't like it. Because their entire working life, their entire normal life is based upon being the proprietor and an enjoyer. And one doesn't know how to function, actually, unless you're able to exert yourself over others, unless you have some enjoyment, unless you participate in the whole circle or cycle of materialistic life. So subtly, people have completely submitted to that. Now, what could potentially happen if you gave up these propensities for lust, anger, greed, envy? You might not be able to function with these agendas anymore. And people don't like that. They don't like that, and more importantly, others around them might not like it. It is a commonly experienced phenomenon by anyone who comes on the path of devotional service that those around them are not always supportive. They don't always appreciate that, you know, my son, my daughter, my relative, this person, my friend, is now becoming a devotee. He's not expressing interest anymore in the things that he should be doing, eating, drinking, being merry. He doesn't find those attractive. There's something seriously wrong with them. That's how people think. But it's because they don't know. They don't know what bliss there is here in genuine Krishna consciousness with Lord Ram at the center of our activities. When we serve the senses of the Lord, and this is a secret only known to the devotees, we experience more bliss than is ever possible by serving our own senses. But people don't know this, and they don't understand how it's possible to live in a concept anything other than being the proprietor, friend, and enjoyer. So when Lord Ram hears these prayers of ours, take this envy away from me. He thinks, okay, you're expressing the desire, but actually your full investment is in the opposite. So what should I do? If I fulfill your prayer, you will resentfully, you will be in a sort of a mental state where you cannot function, where your desires haven't been fully dovetailed. So this is where the difficulty lies. Or this is where the work is required in ourselves. That if we wish to be part of Ram Rajya, as Prabhupada says, people want Ram Rajya without Lord Ram. They want Ram Rajya, all the benefits, without the consciousness that a citizen of Ayodhya needs to have. That Lord Ram is the center of all activities. He's the source of their existence. He's the benefactor. He's the proprietor. He's the supreme friend. It takes some time to mold our consciousness into thinking like that. But it is possible, because in this verse it is said that if anyone orally receives the narrations concerning the characteristics of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes, he will ultimately be freed from the disease of envy and thus be liberated from the bondage of fruitive activities. So by continuing to immerse ourselves in the pastimes of the Lord, hearing the narrations, we will actually slowly chip away at those foundations, those institutions we've built in our consciousness that keep us rooted to the material world with all its material concepts. It is quite possible to survive and exist in the material world in a healthy, wholesome manner, but with Krishna at the center. But we're scared because we don't know how to do that. But it is possible. And this is why we have access to the pastimes of Lord Ram. Hopefully if we immerse ourselves over the next few days and then celebrate the appearance of Lord Ram very nicely on Sunday. And we are fortunate, Lord Ram is here. One of the very few temples where Lord Ram is present. We can take maximum advantage of this. Seek his blessings. Seek the blessings of his companions, which can sometimes be more important. Because through their behavior, they are dear to Lord Ram. So if, for example, Hanuman gives you a blessing that you may serve Lord Ram, well then you're connected to Lord Ram instantly. If Mother Sita gives you a blessing, that may you be free from envy so that you will never have the mentality of Ravana that keeps you away from serving Lord Ram and trying to enjoy his property, then you have good success. If Lakshman gives you a little dose of mercy by which you may be able to practice some austerities in spiritual life, which are necessary for the service of the Lord, for molding our consciousness, then it will become possible. So we have this chance, and all Lord Ram wants to see is how sincerely do we want it? How much do we want to give up the false mentality of our existence in this world, and how much do we actually want the spiritual world? So Sri Ramachandra Bhagavan ki. Any questions? Questions, comments? Okay, Tarana Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very beautiful class. Just one thing which I always think of when you speak about qualities of the Supreme Lord. He is above the modes. He is always supreme. And for the sake of pastimes, sometimes he chooses to forget that to have fun. But we are so conditioned souls, like how we at all can not display envy, not display anger, not display lust. Even Srimad Bhagavatam is full of descriptions of very highly elevated devotees who display envy, great degree of lust, and all kinds of qualities. So, in that sense, Lord is always conscious that He is supreme. Like if I'm controlling something, of course, on the top of something, of course I can play it, you know, and then, you know, there's no need for me to be angry, envious, or fearful. In the same time, Lord Ramachandra, he was not afraid of Ravana or any other demons. He's always supreme in core of his heart. So how can we emulate that at all? As I said, we are almost expected to display these low qualities.
That's interesting. Well, in a broader sense, this is a consideration where a person considers that a situation is required in order for certain behavior to take place. I'll give you an example. Sometimes people say, okay, if I was in a higher position, it could be at work or something, then I would behave in a different way. But actually, to display noble qualities, to practice noble qualities, is actually the thing that gets you the higher position, if you like, considering work or devotional life, anything like that. If we want to be more advanced spiritually, we don't say that when I'm more advanced, I will chant purely. It'll be actually when we practice chanting purely over a considerable period of times, we will be at a more advanced stage. It's that way round. Now with Lord Ramachandra Bhagavan, and we often have and Krishna sometimes with his pastimes as well, and certainly with Prabhupada, sometimes we have a tendency to consider that the sufferings that Lord Ram went through, the sufferings experienced by Krishna sometimes, the sufferings experienced by Prabhupada, the Haridas Thakur, for example, these are of less significance because we're dealing with either divinity or saintly persons. But that's not actually the correct mentality. Lord Ram did suffer. He experienced suffering and hardship. He was hurt to the core of his heart when he heard those words from Kaikeyi. When he saw his father's silence, he was afflicted to the core of his heart. He was deeply touched by that, deeply hurt by that. That should not be understated. When we read the pastimes of Lord Ram's feelings when Mother Sita was kidnapped, it is described he was shedding tears continuously for days, wandering like a madman. He experienced the full experience of deep distress also, completely voluntarily. Now, he's the Supreme Lord, as you say, he's the Supreme Lord. And we have many verses. He's the actor on the stage and he performs many pastimes. But while he's performing those pastimes, he experiences all of that suffering. When the pure devotee performs those pastimes, performs their pastimes, they experience suffering. Prabhupada had two heart attacks on a ship. Well, he's a transcendental person and Krishna came to protect him, so it's all okay. I'm not like that. I've suffered a heart attack, therefore I'm just going to lie in bed till the rest of my life. Maybe it's not the way. The idea is that when we transcend the situation that's come to us using the examples of the great personalities, we actually show to the Lord that we actually are deserving of a higher status than the material world. It is that way round. So it is very important that we don't diminish any of the Lord's pastimes. Any of the Lord's pastimes, the beatings that Haridas Thakur suffered, these were serious. The crucifixion of Lord Jesus Christ, these are serious occasions. How did the persons in those circumstances behave? See, the pure devotees of the Lord look at the behavior of the Lord and they try to practice it knowing full well that they are not the Lord themselves. But they still accept as much austerity as possible and even accept more austerity than they deserve for the sake of others. Those are the lessons that we follow. So when we read the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, we read the pastimes of Krishna, there are aspects of the Lord's behavior which are good examples for us to follow. They are good examples for us to follow. Some of those we've spoken about today. His thought processes, his decisions, his pleasant behavior, his lack of envy. Then there are other activities of the Lord which are not meant for us. Krishna playing with the gopis, Krishna killing all the demons, Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. These are not activities for us. Lord Ramachandra firing arrows, killing Ravana. These are not activities for us. So we need to have a certain discrimination when we read Shastra. And that discrimination is provided by the Acharyas. When the Lord performs his pastimes, he does whatever he wants. He's not obliged to follow any script at any point. He does certain things. But the Acharyas, they go through those pastimes and they select which of the Lord's activities are meant as examples for us. And certainly, when the Lord experiences these great moments of distress, those are meant to be items that we deeply think about. And we consider, the last time I experienced a fraction of this distress, how did I behave? Most probably, most of us, when we are faced with a situation like Lord Ram, we would at least rebel to some extent. We would argue, we would attempt to state our case, we would attempt to do something to rectify the situation. How many of us would be so totally dedicated to duty and serving the wishes of our seniors that we will completely put aside our own interests? Put aside all interests, comfort, security. Lord Ram was in the forest with wild animals. Mother Sita was there. Not the environment of choice. So I would say the answer to that is that we shouldn't minimize the Lord's behavior. When he comes and performs pastimes, those should be taken to be as serious as they are described. When we actually understand the Lord's pastimes, it is said, janma karma chame divyam, understanding his birth and activities properly, then we go to the spiritual world. So we have to appreciate those activities in full. And when the Lord suffers, he suffers more than we can, in that sense. In another sense, he's Atmaram. But he's also demonstrating that whatever suffering we are placed in, we can also be like that. So there is actually almost an equivalence, because after all, we are the same in quality. The Lord can do great things, and we can do small things. But a lot of the Lord's activities and pastimes definitely can be practiced by us, at least the behavior. We can be completely sanctified in a saintly sanctified state in the midst of a great calamity. It's entirely possible. And that skill has to be practiced and learnt by the mercy of the Lord. Some devotees go to the extent of requesting more austerities, difficulties. Queen Gundi prays like that. That may these austerities come again and again. Vipada santuta shashwat. And because then we see you again and again. So we might not be there yet, but at least we get a certain dose of we get sent a few miseries every day anyway to keep us entertained. So now what we can do is attempt to evaluate how we perform under those conditions. I know I fail many times, but at least part of being on the process is that we fail. Next day we try not to fail with the same thing again.
But we fail.
You might do, and one day you won't. By the Lord's grace, one day we won't. And that is the Lord's guarantee. He'll protect. Right? So all that's required, as the verse says, ye yathamam prabhatyante. He wants to see the level of approach we make to the Lord. Okay, anything else? Yes, Mataji.
Yes, hi. I've been wanting to ask this question for a while. we've discussed today the energy of envy, displaying it to others. Mm. But what would be the most productive way or healthiest way of dealing with it when it comes to you? Because sometimes those that display envy are the ones closest to us. So where's that thin line of no reaction versus standing up for yourself? Because it's kind of been my experience that the least you react, it continues into bigger arguments. So what is the most productive way to not create more negativity while at the same time dealing with the energy of envy?
Yes, I've experienced that too, or seen it, that sometimes when you are completely passive, it doesn't address the issue. And sometimes the envious person needs a firmer response. So maybe what we can say is that the response we give should be carefully chosen towards bringing about a situation of ultimately reduced envy. Highly envious persons, in the scripture, envious persons are compared to snakes, really. That sometimes, you know, you pacify them. And snakes, as Prabhupada says, you feed them milk and bananas, and the snake becomes more and more envious. It's not that he becomes pacified and stops that envy. So some people, sadly, are like that. And ultimately, for those who are at the extremes of this, and you find these in the pastimes of the Lord has to rectify that mentality by finishing them off, as he had to do with Ravana, when there is literally no option. Now, we don't do that, but we can learn from that, that some people only respond to a certain type of language. So if our mentality is not so much, how can I protect myself, but rather, how can I reduce the overall temperature of the envy in this situation? It could be that we have to be a little bit forceful with our words. We can fire a few carefully chosen words, which may be a little assertive, potentially even. The Bhagavatam is full of different pastimes and episodes, where in some of those episodes, taking the completely humble position was the right thing to do. In certain cases, acting carefully was the right thing to do. In fact, Arjun is a prime example of someone who was almost induced by the Lord to stop being passive and actually become active, an active aggressor. That was induced by the Lord. So clearly there is a license under certain conditions to use anger, force, or whatever it is. So Prabhupada said something once in response to a query of... Someone said, what do we do with anger? Or our acharyas explain how to dovetail anger. If someone happens to be an angry person, then the recommendation given was, okay, if you're helplessly controlled by anger and you have to get angry, then get angry at the non-devotees. Get angry at those who are actively trying to portray a different lifestyle other than service to the Lord, who are intent on causing destruction to people's lives. Use your anger against them. Now, of course, how we display that is a different thing. Devotees are largely supposed to be peaceful, non-violent. Some of them are tapa, socham. These are brahminical qualities we learn. So typically, sort of retribution is best left to the kshatriyas or kshatriya elements in society. You know, the law enforcement agents. We don't need to think we're doing that. But certainly within persons close to us, maybe a few choice sentences at the right time can be the right motive. We're not blind pacifists. So Prabhupada didn't accept the blind pacifism of Mahatma Gandhi either. There are times when you need to act, but that action should always be with the higher goal of ultimate peace, not for any ego-based conquest or anything like that. So it's one of those scenarios where each situation is different, and you probably know the people who need different treatment. Prajan Prabhu?
A situation we can see now that's happening with the Russian aggression at the moment, and there's the positive action is really, though in some way we're helpless, we're not helpless to help those that need help. In other words, that we're not necessarily taking part in the war, but we're assisting those that are suffering because of this aggression by a demoniac person. So, likewise, if the nations themselves organize themselves in such a way to also act in a non-violent way by cutting off the perpetrators of such hideous actions and aggressions. And there is also positive ways it can be done without coming to the level of the demon, you know. In other words, that we're going to help the helpless, and that we're going to help, and those who are in power can demonstrate their power in such a way you cut off the power of the demon. Certainly, those are sort of non-violent actions that I can see that can be constructive in this sort of situation that's happening there.
Yes, it's an interesting situation, but we have to, we can attempt to look at scenarios from platforms other than the convention. Now, the convention platform in the materialistic world with, you know, the standard interactions of politics and precedence and conquest. Yes, there's a whole arrangement taking place within that realm at the moment. And as you say, different entities are taking different actions to bring about a change or whatever, and this and that. History is full of occasions when leadership has changed, when countries have changed, when when conquests have succeeded, when conquests have failed. And the result of actions that have been taken has proved in the long run to be the opposite of the desired action. So my request in context with this discussion is to now try and to put ourselves on a different level of a viewpoint. If we look at the two countries, Ukraine and Russia, and I ask you, who is suffering from a completely non-material point of view? What would the answer be? Sorry? Both. Every single living entity that has taken birth in a material body and that is engaged in activities that are completely contrary to the desire of the Supreme Lord and completely contrary to Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam is actually suffering in a very severe way. Now, we see the pictures and they have a strong impact on our consciousness. But those pictures are actually a small fraction of what awaits everyone in the eternal cycle of samsara. Whatever atrocity has been presented to us on the screens or in the pictures is a small fraction of what is possible. When you take your viewpoint out from the immediate scenario and you apply it to the eternal condition of jivas within this world, which is that life after life, as a consequence of their actions and behavior, they're going to get new bodies, new circumstances, new situations. We understand that actually down the line, someone experiencing peace currently is probably in line for a hefty dose of suffering. Someone experiencing hefty suffering right now is possibly in line for something better later, and vice versa. From that higher viewpoint, we can draw a slightly different angle of emphasis. Now, the emphasis of dealing with inappropriate situations, I'm not diminishing that. But we may be falling from a purely spiritual sort of platform into considering ourselves to be more worthy of being adjudicators, judges, friends even, more powerful than Krishna. Is Krishna not Surit? Well, we read that. Is he not in the heart of every living entity? Is he not in the heart of the demon and the heart of the devotee? So a devotee acknowledges that there are great difficulties going on, and the powers that be are engaged in those. And yes, we can definitely support peaceful life, which is conducive for spiritual progress. We can support peaceful life. We can support acquiring of qualities which will help us in, help everyone, help the world in spiritual life, progress in spiritual life. We can do all those things. But we shouldn't forget our specific focus. Our specific focus is in assisting individuals to come to the lotus feet of Lord Ram. That is our focus. Because only at the shelter of his lotus feet, at the shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, do we put an end to these occasions permanently. Otherwise, any single material solution that takes place and has taken place in the past has a very limited timescale. At most, this lifetime. As Prabhupada says amusingly, in the next life, you could be born onto the opposite side. You could end up on the side of your enemy. And you will conduct your activities with great enmity to the people you considered your friends before. So, in the biggest scheme of things, this notion of friends, enemies, family, partners, this is all inconsequential, because there are far bigger factors at play than the interactions of this world right now in the 70 or 80 years that exist. Prabhupada says, it's like, you know, on the surface of a lake, flotsam and jetsam. Debris comes together by the action of the waves. And these are considered to be family members or relatives or associates. Different sticks from different parts of the lake come together when there is agitation, and they kind of orbit around each other for a little while. Then another wave comes, they're gone. They're dispersed. This is the inevitability of every single material interaction in the world. We do not know even materially the full picture of anything, let alone pass a judgment on it. What we do know is that this world is full of the agendas which are directly opposed to the example of Lord Ram. And every single person in every single place, right from the most heinous criminal organization to the most saintly mode of goodness location, needs Krishna's mercy. So devotees should have a mood of wanting to help absolutely everyone, because everyone needs that help. You could make a case that the demons have the most to gain by advancing in Krishna consciousness. At least materially, they may be advised to turn away from the path of Hiranyakashipu or others. But that shouldn't change the emphasis in our mind. So I would say, as devotees, we need to keep a perspective, which is a perspective of neutrality, but not neutrality as is discussed in the news today. Not that type of neutrality. A neutrality from the viewpoint of the soul.
That was my point. The devotees involved with helping in the situation there are demonstrating on the behalf of Krishna consciousness that what Krishna consciousness can actually do to help the helpless, it's establishing ISKCON as a spiritual organization to put a positive effect to help those that are suffering. And if you see the actions of the Parashuram and what they were doing as examples of spirituality, then that point is. But if we say the other way,
so my question is, why is that point of spirituality demonstrated on only one side?
No, I'm not saying it's not.
So that is a pure spiritual consideration.
It does affect the other side. Some people will be influenced on the other, so-called other side. So I'm not saying friends and enemies. I am saying demons and allies.
Yes, I think my sort of viewpoint is to trying to move away from our judgment of people as demons or otherwise.
So
I think
that's what Arjuna had to do.
Let me answer this point. So it's nice that we do spiritual activities, but if our platform is the spiritual platform and not a mundane platform, then the activities we do are equally important to everyone on all sides. So there should be Harinams taking place in all cities, in all countries of the world, not just one. There should be food distribution in all cities, in all places. So that's why the emphasis, so my point is that when you consider a situation like this, we cannot consider it in terms of allies, demons, this side, that side. We have to consider it that every single person needs assistance. Every single person needs Krishna consciousness. That's the greater need. You can feed a person for this life. If everyone on both sides gets Krishna consciousness, their food problem ultimately is stopped when they give up this cycle of birth and death. So that would be the sort of the emphasis, I think, that we need. Otherwise, you know, we can fall into a dangerous situation of using spirituality to enact agendas on the material platform. And that is where so much pseudo-religion takes place, where many religions are reduced to a sort of moralistic or mode of goodness platform. Anyone else? Any questions? Comments? Okay. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.